Tricia plodded through pines and spruces that grew taller and better spaced as this part of the woods grew older. The light of the setting sun came slanting through the trees in dusty bars of deepening color. She would have thought the trees in the orange-red light beautiful, if not for her thirst. And a part of her mind noted their beauty even in her physical distress. The light was too bright, though. Her temples were pounding with a headache, and her throat felt like a pinhole. In this state, she first dismissed the sound of running water as an auditory hallucination. It couldn't be real water. It was too darn convenient. Nevertheless, she turned toward it, now walking southwest instead of due west, ducking under low branches and stepping over fallen logs like someone in a hypnotic trance. When the sound grew even louder, too loud to mistake for anything other than what it was, Tricia began to run. She slipped twice on the carpet of needles underfoot, and once she had ran through an ugly little pocket of nettles that tore fresh cuts on her forearms and the back of her hands, but she hardly noticed. 10 minutes after first hearing that faint rushing noise, she came to a short, steep drop-off where the bedrock emerged from the thin soil and needle carpeting on the forest floor in a series of gray stone knuckles. Below these, brawling along at a healthy clip, was a brook that made her first one seem like no more than a drip from the end of a shut-off hose. Tricia walked along the edge of the drop with perfect unself-consciousness, although a misstep would have sent her tumbling at least 25 feet and likely would have killed her. 5 minutes' walk upstream brought her to a kind of rough groove from the edge of the forest into the gully where the stream ran. It was a natural flume, floored with decades of fallen leaves and needles. She sat down and hooked herself forward with her feet until she sat on top of the grooved place like a kid sitting on top of a slide. She started down, still sitting, dragging her hands and using her feet as brakes. About halfway down, she started to skid. Rather than trying to stop herself, that would most likely start her somersaulting again, she lay back, laced her hands together behind her neck, closed her eyes, and hoped for the best. The trip to the bottom was short and jolting. Tricia whammed into one jutting rock with her right hip, and another struck her laced together fingers hard enough to numb them. If she hadn't put her hands over the top of her head, that second rock might have torn open her scalp, she thought later. Or worse. "Don't break your fool neck," was another grown-up saying she knew, this one a favorite of Grandma McFarland. She hit bottom with a bone-crunching thud, and suddenly her sneakers were full of freezing cold water. She pulled them out, turned around, flopped onto her belly, and drank until a spike drove into her forehead the way it sometimes did when she was hot and hungry and gobbled ice cream too fast. Tricia pulled her dripping, mud-streaked face out of the stream's cold, boiling course and looked up at the darkening sky, gasping and grinning blissfully. Had she ever tasted water this good? No. Had she ever tasted anything this good? Absolutely not. This was in a class by itself. She plunged her face back in and drank again. At last she got up on her knees, uttered a vast watery belch, and laughed shakily. Her stomach felt swollen, tight as a drum. For the time being, at least, she wasn't even hungry. The flume was too steep and too slippery to reclimb. She might get halfway or even most of the way up, only to slide all the way back down to the bottom again. The going looked fairly easy on the other side of the brook, however. Steep and tree-covered, but not too brushy. And there were plenty of rocks to use as stepping stones. She could go a little way before it got too dark to see. Why not? Now that she had filled her body with water, she felt strong again, wonderfully strong, and confident. The bog was behind her, and she had found another stream. A good stream.
"Yes, but what about the special thing?" the cold voice asked.
Tricia was frightened by that voice all over again. The stuff it said was bad. That she should have discovered such a dark girl hiding inside her was even worse.
"Did you forget about the special thing?"
"If there ever was a special thing," Tricia said, "it's gone now. Back with the deer, maybe."
It was true, or seemed to be true. That sensation of being watched, perhaps stalked, was gone. The cold voice knew it and made no reply. Tricia found she could visualize its owner, a tough little sneering-mouthed tootsie who looked only slightly coincidentally like Tricia herself.
the resemblance of a second cousin, perhaps. Now she was stalking away with her shoulders held stiffly high and her fists clenched, the very picture of resentment.
"Yeah, go away and stay away," Tricia said. "You don't scare me."
And after a pause,
"Fuck you!"
There it came out of her mouth again, what Pepsi called the F-word, and Tricia wasn't sorry. She could even imagine saying it to her brother Pete if Pete started up with all his Malden crap again while they were walking home from school. "Malden this and Malden that, Dad this and Dad that." And what if she just said, "Hey, Pete, fuck you, deal with it," instead of trying to be either all quiet and sympathetic or all bright and cheery and let's change the subject. Just, "Hey, Pete, that's a big fuck you," like that. Tricia saw him in her head, saw him staring at her with his jaw dropped most of the way down to his chin. The image made her giggle. She got up, approached the water, picked out 4 stones that would take her across, and dropped them, 1 at a time, into the stream bed. Once on the far side, she began to work her way down the slope. The hillside steepened steadily, and the stream grew ever noisier beside her, rolling and tumbling in its rocky bed. When Tricia came to a clearing where the ground was relatively flat, she decided to stop for the night. The air had grown thick and shadowy. If she tried to go on down the slope, she would be risking a fall. Besides, this wasn't too bad. She could see the sky at least.
"Bugs are fierce, though," she said,
waving at the mosquitoes around her face and slapping a few more off her neck. She went to the stream to get mud, but, ha ha, joke's on you, girl, there was no mud to get. Plenty of rocks, but no mud. Tricia sat back on her heels for a moment while the minges executed complicating flying patterns around her eyes, thought things over, then nodded. She scraped the needles away from a small circle of ground with the sides of her hands, dug a little bowl in the soft earth, then used her water bottle to fill it up from the stream. She made mud with her fingers, taking a great deal of pleasure in the process. It was Grandma Anderson she thought of, making bread in Grandma Anderson's kitchen on Saturday mornings, standing on a stool to knead the dough because the counter was so high. When she had lots of good goo, she smeared it all over her face. By the time she finished this, it was almost dark. Tricia stood up, still rubbing mud on her arms, and looked around. There was no convenient fallen tree to sleep under tonight, but about 20 yards from this side of the stream, she spied a tangle of dead pine boughs. She took these to one of the tall firs near the stream and leaned them against the trunk like upside-down fans, creating a little space she could crawl into, sort of a half-tent. If no wind came up to knock the branches over, she thought she would be fairly snug. As she brought the last 2 over, her stomach cramped and her boughs loosened. Tricia stopped, holding a branch in each hand, waiting to see what would happen next. The cramp let go, and the old weak feeling down low inside her passed, but she still didn't feel quite right. Fluttery. Butter fluttery, was Grandma Anderson's word, only she used it to mean nervous, and Tricia didn't feel nervous exactly. She didn't know how she felt.
"It was the water," the cold voice said. "Something in the water. Your poison sugar. Probably be dead by morning."
"If I am, I am," Tricia said, and added the last 2 branches to her makeshift shelter. "I was so thirsty I had to drink." To this there was no reply. Perhaps even the cold voice, traitor that it was, understood that much. She'd had to drink. Had to. She slipped off her pack, opened it, and reverently took out her Walkman. She settled the earbuds into place and pushed the power button. WCAS was still strong enough to listen to, but the signal wasn't what it had been last night. It made Tricia feel funny to think that she had almost walked out of her radio station's broadcast area, the way that you drove out of them when you were on a long car trip. It made her feel funny, all right. Very funny indeed. Funny in her stomach.
"All right,"
Joe Castiglione said. His voice was thin, seeming to come from a great distance.
"Most hands in, and we're ready for the bottom of the fourth."
Suddenly, the butter flutterers were in her throat as well as her stomach, and those meaty hiccups, irk, 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 started again. Tricia rolled away from her shelter, lurched to her knees,
and threw up into the shadows between two trees, holding onto Wondry with her left hand and clutching her stomach with her right. She stayed where she was, gasping for breath and spitting out the taste of slightly used fiddleheads. Sour, acidic, while Mo fanned on three pitches. Troy O'Leary was up next.
Well, the Red Sox have got their work cut out for them,
Troop remarked.
They're down 7-1 in the bottom of the fourth, and Andy Pettit is twirling a gem.
Oh, sugar tit, Tricia said, and then vomited again. She couldn't see what was coming out. It was too dark for that, and she was glad, but it felt thin, more like soup than puke. Something about the almost rhyme of those two words, soup and puke, made her stomach immediately knot up again. She backed away from the trees between which she had thrown up, still on her knees, and then her bowels cramped again, this time more fiercely. Ah, sugar tit, Tricia wailed, tearing at the snap on the top of her jeans. She was sure she wasn't going to make it, absolutely positive. But in the end, she was able to hold on just long enough to get her jeans and underwear yanked down and pulled out of the way. Everything down there came out in a hot, stinging rush. Tricia cried out, and some bird in the dying light cried back, as if in mockery. When it was finally over and she tried to get on her feet, a wave of lightheadedness struck her. She lost her balance and plopped back down in her own hot mess.
Lost and sitting in my own crap, Tricia said.
She began to cry again, then also to laugh as it struck her funny. Lost and sitting in my own crap indeed, she thought. She struggled up, crying and laughing. Her jeans and underwear puddled around her ankles. The jeans were torn at both knees and stiff with mud, but at least she'd avoided dipping them in shit, so far anyway. She pulled her pants off and walked to the stream, naked from the waist down and holding her Walkman in one hand. Troy O'Leary had singled around the time she lost her balance and plopped into her own poop. Now, as she stepped barefoot into the freezing cold stream, Jim Leyritz hit into a double play. Side retired. Utterly sexual. Bending, getting water and splashing it onto her fanny and the backs of her thighs, Tricia said,
It was the water, Tom. It was the damn old water. But what was I supposed to do? Just look at it?
Her feet were completely numb by the time she stepped out of the stream. Her backside was also pretty numb, but at least she was clean again. She put on her underwear and her pants and was just doing the snap on the jeans when her stomach clenched again. Tricia took two big steps back to the trees, clutched the same one, and vomited again. This time there seemed to be nothing solid in it at all. It was like ejecting two cups of hot water. She leaned forward and put her forehead against the pine tree's sticky bark. For just a moment, she could imagine a sign on it, like the kind people hung over doors of their lakeside and seaside camps. Tricia's Pukin Place. That made her laugh again. But it was bad laughter. And through all the air between these woods and the world she had so foolishly believed was hers, that jingle was playing again, the one that went, 1-800-54-GIANT. Now her bowels again, tightening and cramping.
No,
Tricia said, with her forehead still against the tree and her eyes closed.
No, please, no more. Help me, God, please, no more.
Don't waste your breath, said the cold voice. It's no good praying to the subaudible. The cramp loosened. Tricia walked slowly back to her shelter on legs that felt rubbery and unstable. Her back hurt from vomiting. Her stomach muscles felt oddly sprung, and her skin was hot. She thought maybe she had a fever. Derek Lowe came in to pitch for the Red Sox. Jorge Posada greeted him with a triple into the right field corner. Tricia crawled into her shelter, being careful not to brush any of the branches with her arm or hip. If she did that, the whole thing would probably fall over. If she was caught short again, that's what her mom called it. Pepsi called it having the Hershey squirts, or doing the outhouse polka. She'd probably knock it all over anyway. Meantime, though, she was in here. Chuck Knobloch hit what Troop called a towering fly ball. Darren Bragg caught it, but Posada scored. 8-1, Yankees. She was on a roll tonight, no doubt about it. On an absolute roll.
Who do you call when your windshield's busted?
She sang under her breath as she lay on the pine needles.
1-800-54-J-
A sudden spasm of the shivers took her.
Instead of hot and feverish, she felt cold all over. She grabbed her muddy arms with her muddy fingers and held on, hoping the branches she had so carefully set up wouldn't all fall down on top of her.
"The water," she moaned. "The water, the damned old water. No more of that."
But she knew better, and didn't need the cold voice to tell her anything. She was already thirsty again. Vomiting and the aftertaste of fiddleheads had made her thirst even stronger, and she would be revisiting the stream soon enough. She lay listening to the Red Sox. They woke up in the eighth, scoring 4 runs and chasing Pettit. While the Yankees batted against Dennis Eckersley in the top of the ninth, the Eck was what Joe and Troop called him, Tricia gave in. She couldn't stand listening to the daffy babble of the stream any longer. Even with the Walkman's volume turned up, it was there, and her tongue and throat begged for what she was hearing. She backed carefully out of the shelter, went to the stream, and drank again. It was cold and delicious, tasting not like poison, but like the nectar of the gods. She crawled back to her shelter, alternately hot and cold, sweaty and shivery. As she lay down again, she thought, "I'll probably be dead by morning." Dead? Or so sick, I'll wish I was dead. The Red Sox, now down by a score of 8-5, loaded the bases with just 1 out in the bottom of the ninth. Nomar Garciaparra hit a deep drive to center field. If it had gone out, the Sox would have won the game by a score of 9-8. Instead, Bernie Williams made a leaping grab at the bullpen wall and snared Garciaparra's bid. 1 run scored on the sacrifice fly, but that was all. O'Leary came up and struck out against Mariano Rivera, completing an undistinguished night and ending the game. Tricia pushed the power button on her Walkman, saving the batteries. Then she began to cry, weakly and helplessly, with her head in her crossed arms. She was sick to her stomach and queasy in her bowels. The Sox had lost. Tom Gordon never even got in the stupid game. Life was the puppy shits. She was still crying when she fell asleep. At the Maine State Police Barracks in Castle Rock, a short telephone call came in just as Tricia was going against her better judgment and drinking from the stream for the second time. The caller gave his message to the operator and to the tape recorder, which preserved all incoming calls. Call commences 21:46 hours.
"The girl you're looking for was snatched off the trail by Francis Raymond Mazzaroli. That's M as in microscope. He's 36 years old, wears glasses, has short hair, dyed blonde. Got that?"
"Sir, can I ask you to..."
Shut up. Listen. Mazzaroli is driving a blue Ford van, what I think is called an Econo line. He's in Connecticut by now, at least. He's a bad scumbag. Run his record and you'll see. He'll fuck her a few days if she doesn't give him any trouble. You could have a few days, but then he'll kill her. He's done it before."
"Sir, do you have a license number?"
"I gave you his name and what he's driving. I gave you all you need. He's done this before."
"Sir..."
"I hope you kill him."
Call ends 21:48 hours. Traceback put the origin of the call at a payphone in Old Orchard Beach. No help there. Around 2 o'clock the next morning, 3 hours after police in Massachusetts, Connecticut, New York, and New Jersey had begun looking for a blue Ford van driven by a man with short blonde hair wearing glasses, Tricia awoke with more nausea and cramps. She knocked her shelter over, backing out of it, fumbled her jeans and underwear down, and voided what seemed like a huge quantity of weak acid. It hurt her down there, hurt her with a deep, itching sting that felt like the worst case of prickly heat she'd ever had. When that part was over, she crawled back to Trisha's puking place and grabbed hold of the same tree. Her skin was hot, her hair was matted with sweat. She was also shaking all over, and her teeth were chattering.
"I can't vomit anymore. Please, God, I can't vomit anymore. It'll kill me if I go on vomiting."
This was when she actually saw Tom Gordon for the first time. He was standing in the woods about 50 feet away, his white uniform seeming almost to burn in the moonlight which fell through the trees. He was wearing his glove. His right hand was behind his back, and Tricia knew there was a baseball in it. He would be cupping it against his palm and twirling it in his fingers, feeling the seams go by, stopping only when they were exactly where he wanted them and the grip was right.
"Tom," she whispered, "you never got a chance tonight, did you?"
Tom took no notice. He was looking in for the sign. That stillness spun out from his shoulders, enveloping him. He stood there in the moonlight, as clear as the cuts on her arms, as real as the nausea in her throat and belly, all those nasty butterflutters. He was stillness, waiting for the sign. Not perfect stillness. There was that hand behind his back, turning the ball and turning the ball, searching for the best grip. But all stillness where you could see, yeah, baby. Stillness, waiting for the sign. Tricia wondered if she could do that. Just let the shakes run off her like water off a duck's back and be still and conceal the churning inside her. She held on to the tree and tried. It didn't happen all at once. Good things never did, her dad said. But it did happen. Quiet inside. Blessed stillness. She stayed that way for a long time. Did the batter want to step out because he thought she was taking too long between pitches? Fine. It was nothing to her, one way or the other. She was only stillness. Stillness, waiting for the right sign and the right grip on the ball. Stillness came from the shoulders. It spun out from there. It cooled you and focused you. The shivers eased, then stopped entirely. At some point, she realized that her stomach had also settled. Her bowels were still crampy, but not as bad now. The moon was down. Tom Gordon was gone. Of course, he had never really been there at all. She knew that, but he sure looked real that time, she croaked. Real as real. Wow. She got up and walked slowly back to the tree where her shelter had been. Although she wanted nothing except to huddle on the pine needles and go to sleep, she set up the fans of branches again, then crawled in behind them. 5 minutes later, she was dead to the world. As she slept, something came and watched her. It watched for a long time. It was not until light began to line the horizon in the east that it went away. And it did not go far.